WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into Current Sports. As always, I am your host, Al Martin. And we've got a fantastic hour in store for all of you out there. On today's show, we will invite Al Manfroni, who is the head coach of the Michigan State Club football team. Al will give us an update on the year, as well as chat about how the team is trying to acquire a venue on campus to play at so that you all can come out and enjoy each and every one of their home games. We'll also be breaking down the Michigan State and Air Force game and bringing you an update concerning Air Force's starting quarterback. Not good news for Air Force, and Coach D'Antonio addressed the media this morning at Spartan Stadium to preview that matchup. We'll recap what he had to say. Also, we'll finally get to chatting about Draymond Green donating $3 million to the Michigan State men's basketball program, and our feature on Through the Banks of the Red Cedar, the new documentary directed by Maya Washington, who is the daughter of Gene Washington, famed Michigan State wide receiver from back in the day. Of course, Maya, Gene, Clinton Jones, who will be inducted into the he's already inducted into the Michigan State Athletics Hall of Fame, but the College Football Hall of Fame, and whose number was retired, actually, into the Ring of Fame at Spartan Stadium. Clinton Jones, you get to hear from his thoughts on the documentary as well. All of that and so much more. We'll be also taking your calls all the way up until 2 p.m. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on anything we talk about, you know that number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. But, hey, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners for this September 15th. The season for the Lansing Lugnuts has sadly come to an end. The West Michigan Whitecaps turned an initially close game into a wide margin and clinched the Midwest League Eastern Division crown with a 14-5 win over the Lansing Lugnuts Monday night at Cooley Law School Stadium. Now, the Whitecaps win the best of three series, 2-1, and rallied from a 1-0 hole in the series with a pair of victories in Lansing. Now, West Michigan will play the Cedar Rapids Colonels in the Midwest League Championship Series. Sad to see the season end for the Lansing Lugnuts, but it was a fun one, folks. All right, rookie Tyler Duffy tossed a 6 1/3 strong innings while the Minnesota Twins jumped on the Detroit Tigers early en route to a 7-1 win yesterday at Target Field. Now, what helps the Twins keep pace in the chase for the second American League wild card spot. Minnesota, which has won 4 of its last 5, remained 1 game behind Texas. Tigers lefty Kyle Lobstein struggled, lasting just 1 1/3 innings and surrendering 6 runs on 7 hits and 2 walks. Air Force will be without starting quarterback Nate Romine when the Falcons, who are 2-0, try to upset number 4 Michigan State on Saturday at Spartan Stadium. Kickoff is at noon on ABC. Now, Romine is out for the year with torn ligaments in his right knee. The Colorado Springs Gazette reported that, citing Romine's Facebook page. The 5'11 junior was carted off in the fourth quarter of Air Force's 37-16 win over San Jose State and will be replaced by senior Carson Roberts. Unfortunate news for Air Force. Following last Saturday's 31-28 victory over number 7 Oregon, 2 Spartans were honored by the Big Ten Conference Monday, as junior linebacker Riley Bulla was named the Big Ten Defensive Player of the Week, and running back L.J. Scott earned Big Ten Co-Freshman of the Week accolades. Bulla recorded a career-high 14 tackles and a pass breakup against the Oregon Ducks. Scott becomes the first Spartan to be named Big Ten Freshie of the Week since the award's inception in 2013. He rushed 11 times for 76 yards and 2 TDs in the victory over Oregon. Officials from the Bobby Dodd Coach of the Year Foundation and Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl yesterday announced that Michigan State head football coach Mark D'Antonio has been selected as the Dodd Trophy Coach of the Week. How about that? Now, the Dodd Coach of the Week award honors the football coach whose program embodies the award's 3 pillars of scholarship, leadership, and integrity. while of course also having success on the playing field during the previous week. Congrats to Coach Mark D'Antonio. Fresh off his official visit to Michigan State over the weekend, basketball recruit Miles Bridges tweeted today a final three: Michigan State, Kentucky, and Indiana. He told that to ESPN.com, and he will be making his decision on October 3rd. Bridges, a consensus top 15 recruit from Flint, who plays for Huntington, West Virginia Prep, has been viewed as an MSU-Kentucky battle by national analysts, and he is due to visit Kentucky this weekend. He visited IU in August. And big news concerning a standout basketball player from right here in Michigan, East Lansing sophomore Brandon Johns has been named to the USA Basketball's junior national team roster for the 2015-16 year. Now, Johns, who was rated one of the nation's top prospects in the 2018 class, was one of 57 players named to the roster today. He is one of 55 high school basketball prospects that will compete in the USA Basketball minicamp from October 2nd to the 4th at the United States Olympic Training Center in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And last but not least, last night, the first Monday night football football game of the regular season, the Falcons beat the Eagles 26-24, and the 49ers topped the Vikings 20-3. The first Monday night football of the regular year. Gotta love that. And it was two entertaining games, to say the least. Except that second one, kind of a blowout, 20-3. Yeah, kind of surprising there. All right, well, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on any of those and so much more, you just have to pick up that phone and dial 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Without further ado, it's about that time to start the show. Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Happy, happy Tuesday. It is September 15th, and you are locked into a fun-filled hour here on WKAR AM 870. Later on in the hour, my guest for today will be Al Manfroni. He is the head club football coach and he's been doing a great job. Al Manfroni's really been doing a great job. But right now, they're kind of struggling to try and find a venue here in the area. Al will chat about the team and about that quarrel and quandary with me later on in the show. You don't want to miss that. We'll also be bringing you a feature of, I tell you what, a historical era in the world of Michigan State football, that being the 1965-66 Michigan State football team, which won national titles, of course. We all know what occurred that year as well, the 10-10 tie with Notre Dame. And Maya Washington, who was the daughter of Gene Washington, famed Michigan State wide receiver, who was inducted into the Michigan State Athletics Hall of Fame not too long ago, as well as Clinton Jones, whose number was retired in the Ring of Fame at Spartan Stadium. And he will be inducted into the he's already inducted to the Michigan State Athletics Hall of Fame, but he will be inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame later on this year. But Clinton Jones was also at this viewing party for Through the Banks of the Red Cedar, this documentary recounting that time back in the 60s when, of course, Duffy recruited blacks from the South, a trend that had really never been set before. When, of course, you talk about, you know, African-Americans being recruited to play football or sports in general from the South to the north. Duffy really being ahead of the curve there. Also, Lorenzo White was in the house as well to witness that viewing. You get to hear from him as well, so you don't want to miss that. That'll occur after our first break. But I want to start off. I want to start off by, of course, that bite from last night's Monday Night Football game. It was a doubleheader, a fantastic time just to max tax and relax and enjoy some football on a Monday night on a beautiful day in Michigan. It's a beautiful day today as well. I tell you what, I wish it was like this on Saturday. Oh, goodness. I'm still getting over this cold, folks. I do feel a lot better than I did yesterday. So it's clearing up. It's clearing up. But still, I'm fighting it nonetheless, folks. But such a gorgeous time here in Michigan as we still are holding on to a bit of summer here. But it was, you know, last night was just a great day to just, you know, sit back and watch some football. And we had two entertaining games to watch, of course. The Falcons topping the Eagles 26-24, a very entertaining game. And the second game was a bit sloppy to start. You know, got back on track as the game went on. But the 49ers eventually topped the Minnesota Vikings 20-3. And Carlos Hyde, was he good or what, folks? You know, going back and watching Carlos Hyde, getting a chance to see him in person, actually, when he played for the Ohio State Buckeyes, and seeing how efficient he was last night for the San Francisco 49ers. It was fun to watch. But I will say this. It was fun to a degree for me because in my fantasy football league, and you guys know it's fantasy football season, in my fraternity league, and I bragged yesterday how I had a double-digit league lead in both of my leagues, in my fraternity league and as well as the one with the homies. And, you know, the one with my homeboys, that's a blowout. I won that one by like 20 points. But last night, Carlos Hyde ended up going just completely insane in the membrane, and I ended up losing because of Carlos Hyde. He ran for like, looking at the stats here, he had 26 carries for 168 yards and two touchdowns. My opposition, who that's the only player he had left to play, he ended up getting, you know, my competitor like 22 points, and I ended up losing. Yeah, folks, I almost threw my remote at my television last night. But Carlos Hyde, he looks really, really good. And I must say, I think the San Francisco 49ers, I mean, as a whole, they looked really, really good. I think Colin Kaepernick, of course, he certainly has a target on his back this year because, you know, he's facing a lot of criticism as to whether or not he can be that quarterback that we first saw when he entered the league at 25 years old. And you know, and when he had that just unbelievable year, you know, in which he had just a breakout season. Last year was a struggle for him, and, you know, so he has a bit of a target on his back. And the thing about Colin Kaepernick, I've always said, is that Colin Kaepernick, you know, whenever he drops back in that pocket, if his first option wasn't there back in the day, I mean, he was totally abandoning ship and trying to make things happen with his feet. That's exactly what you know, the type of passer and the type of quarterback that Colin Kaepernick was. But I saw a different Cap last night, folks. I mean, Colin, if he didn't see that first receiver, he was going through his progressions, taking his time, looking at receiver to receiver to receiver, and if things broke down, then he resorted to putting the ball on the ground and making things happen with his feet. Colin Kaepernick looks like a very mature quarterback, and I think, you know, looking at that offseason, you know, I think it paid dividends for him, and we saw a different quarterback. We are seeing a young quarterback really mature and come to it in his own. Now, again, I don't want to overreact because, again, this is only week one. This is the first game of the year. But we did see things from Colin Kaepernick that alluded to a changing of the guard when it comes to his play. So congrats to Cap, man. If he keeps that up, I think the 49ers are going to be fantastic. I really like that team. I really like the 49ers. Then, you know, if things aren't going well for Colin Kaepernick through the air, he does have that security blanket in handing the ball off to that, you know, to Carlos Hyde. So it's going to be a fun year, I think, for the San Francisco 49ers, and they are certainly going to turn some heads. And then another guy I want to shout out too. I mean, Jarryd Hayne. How about him? I mean, a guy who, you know, who played rugby for some time. He was an all-star rugby player, then decided to say, you know what, I may try to give football a try. And you know, we saw Hayne in preseason just completely tear it up. I mean, my gosh. I mean, you talk about toughness, and rugby players are usually tough, folks. But this kid seems to take it to another level. I mean, he runs like he's angry. Jarryd Hayne is going to be a star in this league, I really believe. And so you have Hayne, you got Hyde in there as well. And who else did we also see in the backfield for the San Francisco 49ers? Former Detroit Lions running back Reggie Bush. And what does Reggie Bush do after two carries? He goes out of the game with an injury. Yeah, and I tweeted last night, we've seen that before, right? Reggie Bush going out early. He went to the locker room, and he was actually carted off. And you see him, you know, looking down and you know, his chin looking, just staring at, staring at his hands as they cart him off into the locker room. And I'm sitting there saying, Reggie Bush, he's such an elusive talent. And we saw that on the very first carry of the game for Reggie Bush. I mean, he was able to bounce to the outside and get some yardage, I think, for a first down. And, you hear Steve Berman and Trent Dilfer, you know, raining praises about Reggie Bush and how great he is. And then all of a sudden he gets injured. And that's the thing about Reggie Bush. You just can't rely on him because he's always getting hurt. I mean, my goodness, just two carries and the man goes out the game. So that one wasn't a surprise there. But watch out, though. Again, watch out for the San Francisco 49ers. I really think Eric Mangina as well, being the man behind that defense. Then you got North Turner as well for the Vikings, though. I mean, I really thought there were a lot of interesting dynamics on both sides of the ball when looking at the 49ers and Vikings. So an entertaining game. And the San Francisco 49ers putting out a 20-3 win last night. I think there are some things to be positive about if you are a San Francisco 49ers fan. As far as that first game goes, a very close game. I didn't get a chance to see most of it. I was actually doing some work at home, and then I forgot that the game was on and turned into it into like the second half. But I saw some good things from DeMarco Murray, who is not running behind an offensive line like he had with my Dallas Cowboys, which I think is the best offensive line in football. But he was able to do some things as well. Just looking at the Falcons as well, I think the Falcons had an overall good game when looking at the numbers. But it was a fun night of football, folks. Isaac, I want to invite you to the show, our fantastic engineer of WKR's Current Sports. Did you check out some Monday Night Football last night?
Yeah, you know I did. I was excited to have it back finally. The first week of football season is always fun. So I had a similar situation to you. In fantasy football, one win, one loss, and it was upsetting because I was up in one of my leagues by a few points going in, and the other player, I expected him to win because he did have Adrian Peterson and Julio Jones. Pretty good combination, but I didn't expect Adrian Peterson to have a great game in his first game back. He's been out of football for a year, and he just signed that new contract, so the incentive at the end of the tunnel isn't really there. But Julio Jones, that's the other player to shout out from the night. Julio Jones was absolutely unrivaled.
141 yards. Crazy.
Yeah, 141 yards, and I believe a touchdown.
Two touchdowns,
yeah. That's right. Sorry. And, yeah, so he just killed me with Julio Jones. And I like the way you put Reggie Bush as an elusive talent. As a Saints fan, I'm going to use that as a double entendre because Reggie Bush also, he's such a talent, but it's so hard to harness that talent. It's so hard to maximize it because you see him, he's so evasive, elusive, but he loves running sideways. He loves running sideways. He doesn't have the running back mentality of just going straight up field. And therefore, I'm not sure if we'll ever see the best of Reggie Bush in the pros.
Yeah, he's definitely in an east-west type of a running back instead of a north-south guy. And the thing is, he just can't stay healthy. And that's one of the reasons why the Lions decided to just give him up. So I really hope he gets it together. I mean, but you all know the shelf life of an NFL running back isn't long. So for Reggie Bush, I mean, it's just like, gosh, I mean, if you're not going to get it right now, when are you going to get it right? When are you going to stay healthy? Because it's not like his body is getting healthier. I mean, it's breaking down over time because you are a running back in the National Football League. So I really hope it isn't anything serious. But we'll see as that protrudes. But again, I'm glad you shout out Julio Jones because, yeah, he was the guy that everyone was talking about last night as far as from a receiver position goes. I mean, he had 9 receptions for 141 yards. He was also last night's stud as well. You know what? Going back to what the Lions didn't do on Sunday, Isaac, and we saw Matt Ryan, you know, throughout that game for Atlanta. I mean, he was 23 of 34 for 298 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. You know, it's interesting because looking throughout that game, and we saw the Philadelphia Eagles really hone in and send a lot of guys at Julio Jones to try and slow him down. Julio Jones is certainly a fantastic talent in the world of football. But you can't tell me and sit here and tell me that Julio Jones is better than Calvin Johnson. So looking at, you know, the argument immediately came to the surface last night when looking at Julio's numbers last night, even with the Eagles keying in on Julio Jones. Why wasn't Matthew Stafford able to find Calvin Johnson, you know, as the Lions took on the San Diego Chargers on Sunday, why wasn't Matthew Stafford able to do what Matt Ryan did last night, even with that target on the back of Julio Jones? Because we all know that there's also a target on, I think, the NFL's best wide receiver in Calvin Johnson. Why wasn't Matthew Stafford able to find Calvin Johnson in the same light that Ryan was able to do with Jones?
Well, we've always seen that with Matthew Stafford. He's always been able to throw to Calvin, but he's been, in some ways, too ready to make that throw to Calvin Johnson, not going through his reads all the time and just being very one-way, one-directional thinking when it comes to his receiving target. So I don't think the biggest problem for the Lions was not throwing it to Calvin Johnson. I thought it was not throwing it to any of the receivers because he saw a bad game from Golden Tate as well. You didn't see any of the slot receivers really get that involved. The best Lions receiver yardage-wise and touchdown-wise on the day was Eric Ebron, who, he's a good player. I think he could have a great year. But when you've got Calvin Johnson, Golden Tate, no, those guys need to see some of the ball. If they're going to double or triple team Johnson, then get to Golden Tate. Because the Falcons, like you said, multiple coverages were thrown at them to try to prevent them from throwing it to Julio Jones. But they would have no problem when Jones was well covered than giving it to Roddy White, who was their second best pass catcher on the day. 4 receptions, 84 yards. So therefore, it doesn't matter who gets it. You just got to move the ball. And that's what Matthew Stafford was unable to do.
Well, the thing I look at when having this discussion that I immediately turn to, because I had this conversation with a few of my buddies last night. And if you are an elite receiver in the NFL, I have a threshold for any quarterback who has an elite receiver on their roster. You have to at least target that elite receiver, at least, for me, in my opinion, at least 8 times. That's my magic number. And looking at the amount of targets for star wide receivers in the league, I mean, usually when a guy has a breakout game, they're going to have at least 8 targets or more. Looking at the Chargers and Lions game, Calvin Johnson was only targeted 4 times throughout that entire game. Golden Tate, who I think is an elite receiver in the league, he was targeted 8 times. He only caught 4, though. So it's like Matthew Stafford didn't even try to look for Calvin Johnson. It's like he just abandoned ship after a while because he saw multiple coverages giving Calvin quote-unquote problems. Calvin Johnson is a guy who needs to see the ball more than 4 times. He is the best in the game. I just thought that was just a bit inexcusable at the end of the day. So I think it's something that we'll see fixed as the year moves on, you know, as this upcoming week happens. But at the same time, I think Matthew Stafford did a poor job of getting Calvin Johnson involved throughout the entire game. And the writing was on the wall, I thought, for looking at the very beginning of the game, because we saw that first reception that Calvin Johnson have. You know, that was a first down, automatic. And I'm saying it's going to be a long day for that San Diego Chargers defense. And then we saw the exact opposite happen. It's like he just said, all right, I'm done going to Calvin Johnson. I'm done going to the best wide receiver in the game of football. I just thought it was inexcusable.
I thought Matthew Stafford was a little bit too wary because I sense that
they
talk
played too
about,
conservative.
Yeah, that talk about him being too one-way, one-directional in his thinking, only trying to be stubborn and force it through to Calvin Johnson, I think that might have gone to him. We see all the times players overcorrect their mistakes, and this is why I thought it might have been. So that every time Calvin Johnson, you talked about 4 targets for him, anytime there was decent coverage on him, Matthew Stafford would avoid making that throw. Where, yes, you don't want to throw it into double or triple coverage when the guy is absolutely enveloped by the defense, but this is the best receiver in the game. He can make plays if you throw it up to him. So I thought this was just one whole other pull of the problem, totally different from last year, but it's still something that needs to be fixed just as badly.
Yeah, certainly, without a doubt, as the season moves on. Folks, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I want to finally, discuss this story because it actually occurred last week on Thursday. Friday, we were packed with Oregon and Michigan State discussion. We took a lot of your calls on Friday. And on Monday, of course, we were recapping the weekend that was in sports and a lot to get to with a ton of discussion. But I would be remiss if I didn't talk about Draymond Green donating $3.1 million to his alma mater right here at Michigan State University. I guess you can now add philanthropist to his growing list of titles as the 2015 NBA champ has made that donation to MSU. The gift, which is the second largest ever made by an active professional athlete to his or her former school, comes right on the heels of Green's new five-year, $82 million contract with the Golden State Warriors, as well as several other major endorsement deals negotiated by marketing agent Darren Hittner. Here is Draymond Green talking about his donation, as well as Tom Izzo, and what it means to him and this school.
You know, signing the contract was fun. I come back here every summer, and I come back for a reason. Because you missed this place. Oh, it's so great. And I'm thankful to be a Spartan. And, you know, when I come back here, I don't say I'm going to East Lansing. I don't say I'm going home. You know, and that's important to me. You know, and so I thank y'all for that. You know, my entire life has been just about family. You know, whether it was growing up in a family that, you know, my mom, my dad, my grandmother, my grandfather, everything was just about family. You know, and I went on to Saginaw High School and Coach Dawkins, everything was just about a family. It was about taking care of your brothers. It was about looking out for each other, which is one of the things that really enticed me about Michigan State was when I came here, I knew I was welcome. It just felt like a family. You know, AAU basketball, I play with the family. You know, and our motto was God, who I thank every day. It was school, Michigan State. Like, it doesn't get any better than that. So God, school, my family, the family, our way of life. And that's something that I still apply to my life every single day. And I just try to live by that. And Coach Izzo taught me how important family was. And this is a family that I have that is with me forever, I'm with forever. So I just had to put that out there. Thank you for that.
So we're lucky. You know what? I will say this. Enjoy him. Enjoy him. There's not a million guys like him. And enjoy him, appreciate him, and thank him. Because this isn't going to stop with the money. I mean, he is Michigan State's one of our best recruiters. That means students. That means basketball and hockey and football and tennis and volleyball and women's basketball. I mean, he's done, he is our recruiter. And I don't see that changing, you know. I worried a little bit because he was in a campaign this summer where they had him everywhere in the world. But you know what? He ended up back here right before he goes to his big-time things. He's got Travis Walton kind of with him, bringing him along so that he can work him out. And he's just, this is home. And you know what, Day-Day? I think as long as everybody here, with our board, our president, our AD, myself, it'll be home until we're dead. And it'll still be home. So enjoy.
Yeah, how about that? Again, that's head coach of the Michigan State men's basketball program, Tom Izzo, and former Michigan State men's basketball star, Draymond Green, now star with the NBA's Golden State Warriors, talking about Draymond Green and his gift, $3.1 million gift, to the Michigan State men's basketball program. The donation is actually the largest single gift ever given to Michigan State Athletics by a former player, slightly larger than the $3 million given by Magic Johnson in 2012. And I really think, and this was what we, because I went to this, you know, it's going back to this whole story about this press conference. I mean, actually, I got an email out of really nowhere from Michigan State Athletics saying, hey, you may want to go to this press conference that we're having on Thursday afternoon because, something big's going on. So, you know, I go solo dolo. I grab my camera and my tripod, and I'm walking to the Michigan State Breslin Center, and I run into Steve Grinzel, who is a Michigan State Athletics beat reporter. And Steve and I are talking, saying, man, I don't know why we got this email. You know, I'm trying to figure out what's going on. And my guess was, you know, knowing that, of course, Gene Washington and Clinton Jones were in town, for that Through the Banks of the Red Cedar viewing, documentary viewing, I thought that they may be making an announcement, of course, with Clinton Jones, his number being retired into the Ring of Fame at Spartan Stadium. Maybe there was something going to be centered around those two at this presser. But no, I mean, we walk in, and first off, everyone's there. I mean, Tom Anastas, head coach of the Michigan State hockey team, is there. And then you see Luana K. Simon. She walks in. Then you see Michigan State Athletic Director Mark Hollis. He walks in the room. And then I'm looking around and I see, you know, former MSU men's basketball players like Timbo Grakas. He's in the room. And, you know, just, you know, team managers and personnel, they're scattered around the room. And then you just see, you know, just fans of Michigan State Athletics and former donors. They're in the room. And then what happens? Former Michigan State, you know, well, actually active Michigan State men's basketball players like Bryn Forbes, Denzel Valentine, all these guys, they walk into the room and they take a seat. And I'm sitting saying, okay, something big is about to happen. And then right as soon as I say that, I look to my left and Draymond Green walks in the door, you know, suited and booted, you know, looking funky fresh with the suit on, along with his mother. She was also in attendance. And they walk up to the podium, and then we get a sheet. You know, as media members, we get a sheet talking about what this press conference is about. And lo and behold, yeah, it's about Draymond Green donating $3.1 million to the MSU men's basketball program. How cool is that, though, right? And it's just a pure testament. You know, as Draymond stood up there at that podium and talked, you know, it's a pure testament to just how special of a place Michigan State is and just how special of a program Michigan State men's basketball is, along with Michigan State athletics as, you know, as a whole. Because Draymond, as you heard in that bite, he talked about family and how when he came here, and he always says this, when he came here as a boy, but he left East Lansing as a man. And, you know, if you see Tom Izzo and Draymond Green interact, I mean, you know, that's like Tom Izzo's son. You know, I mean, you see him, and that's how Tom Izzo is with just about all of his former players. They have that special bond and that special relationship. And that just shows you how special that program is and how great of a guy Tom Izzo is, really. You know, that he is able to not only make you an outstanding basketball player, but also cultivate and mature a relationship with you that goes beyond what you do on the basketball court. And that's exactly what Draymond Green has with Coach Izzo. And, you know, they embraced and they hugged, man, and it was just a special, special moment. And I think Draymond Green coming back and donating $3.1 million. Again, Forbes has it as the largest donation ever made by an active professional athlete to their former school. That says a lot about what Draymond Green, you know, how he looks at Michigan State University. He looks at it as home. And he looks at Tom Izzo and his program as home. And he really is. You know, another aspect that I really paid close attention to as that presser went on was I paid attention to the demeanor of Michigan State's, you know, active athletes right now, active men's basketball players, guys, you know, like Lou Rawls, Tum Nairn Jr., and Marvin Clark, and Alvin Ellis, and Denzel Valentine, Matt Costello. I paid attention to those guys in the audience as they looked at Draymond Green addressing the reasons why he is giving back to this program. And I tell you what, their eyes were so big, man. I mean, you know, having a guy like Draymond Green, who has gone on from Michigan State and been in the position that they are currently in, gone on from Michigan State to win an NBA championship, to sign an $82 million contract, to give $3.1 million back to his university, that's got to be special. And I can only imagine what was going through their minds, you know, looking at Draymond Green as a role model, as the current active example of what could happen to them if they do it the right way. So hats off to Day-Day. I had to bring that to the forefront and get that off my chest because this is our first time really talking about it because I really think it's cool that Draymond Green is giving back to a program that really made him the man that he is today. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, folks, we will bring you a feature on Through the Banks of the Red Cedar, a documentary recounting the 1965-66 Michigan State football team. You don't want to miss that and so much more. You are tuned into Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. If you haven't heard, big news concerning the Air Force college football team. Again, Air Force will be visiting Spartan Stadium this Saturday at noon to take on the Michigan State football program. But Air Force will be without a pretty big chess piece to what they do on offense. Their starting quarterback, Nate Romine, with the Falcons, he is ruled out for the season with torn ligaments in his right knee. Now, the 5'11" junior was carted off in the fourth quarter of Air Force's 37-16 win over San Jose State and will be replaced by senior Carson Roberts. So Carson Roberts will now be the man behind center for the Falcons when they take on the Spartans. Now, Romine had 111 rushing yards and a touchdown on 22 attempts in the Falcons' run dominated. Of course, they run that tricky triple option offense and was 7-for-18 passing for 143 yards and 2 TDs with 1 interception. Isaac, I really think this is going to be a big blow to Air Force. Anytime you lose your starting quarterback right when the season begins, I mean, two games into the year, it's going to be a big blow. And, it's going to be interesting to see how the needle, how far that needle pushes now when looking at how many points Michigan State will be favored by for this weekend's matchup with now Carson Roberts taking over as that starting QB.
Well, I think what to remember is that, yeah, this is a triple option offense where, Romine would get a decent, or more than a decent, he'd be one of the main ball carriers for this Falcons football team. But at the same time, there's so much more important attributes that he has that maybe the backup like Carson Roberts would not, which is just in a triple option offense, the quarterback decides who to hand it off to, when to pitch it, if to pitch it. He ultimately decides the plays. He's as important as the signal caller of any professional football team because he's got that knowledge. He needs to know how to make the reads, which he's done a pretty darn good job of this season. They're 2-0 with a big win over San Jose State, who's not a horrible football team. That's a Division I team right there. So, yeah, I think this is a big loss, and it would surprise me if the needle didn't shift pretty far in favor of MSU after this one.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, I would assume that they are certainly a double-digit favorite coming into this weekend. Not sure by how many points, but it's going to skyrocket now knowing that Andrew is out for that season opener. And, of course, Mark D'Antonio, he had his presser this morning to preview that matchup. Again, he had it at Spartan Stadium around 11:30 a.m. And, nothing too much to take away. I mean, he's excited about, he talked about, and he thanked the fans who came out to Saturday's game, a packed house on national television, college game day, so on and so forth. So he was very pleased with the atmosphere. He talked about how, the fans really fuel what they do out there on the field. As far as logistical things go, I mean, he talked about Delton Williams and how he doesn't want to burn Delton Williams' red shirt if he doesn't have to this year. Of course, Delton Williams involved with that off-the-field incident in which he was, brandishing a weapon during a road rage incident, in which he was suspended from the team. He lost a lot of time. He was out of game shape. So, they brought him in midway through preseason training camp, trying to get him back into, game shape. But I'm hoping they decide to redshirt this year for him, and then he can come back next year with a full off season in which he can work out and hone his skills and come back ready, fully ready for next season. But Mark D'Antonio said he's not going to burn it just for the heck of burning it at the end of the day. So I don't know if we'll see Delton Williams at all this season. I do think that may be the right move, especially when looking at Madre London and LJ Scott, who are already holding down the fort and doing it pretty well in the backfield for Michigan State's running attack.
Well, Gerald Holmes seems to have a pretty clear position when it comes to that number 3 spot. So, yeah, for Delton Williams to see time, he'd have to supplant all of those 3. And Gerald Holmes didn't even touch the playing field last game. So that would be a tough task. I don't really understand the terminology that he doesn't want to burn a red shirt, I have to say. I think for Delton Williams, a redshirt would be a positive thing. It would give him 2 more years of eligibility, but if D'Antonio didn't see more time in the future for him as well, maybe that's then what he was referring to.
Well, no. Well, what he means is, I mean, you know, he doesn't want to play Delton Williams just for the heck of playing him this season. I think he wants to keep the red. He doesn't want to burn it. He wants to keep the red shirt for Delton Williams.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
So yeah, I misunderstood that.
Yeah, he wants to keep the red shirt for Delton so that he can have an opportunity of having 2 healthy years in which he doesn't have any incidents that he has to deal with off the away from
the field. Okay, I took that the wrong way.
No. I mean, no, I agree with Coach D in that regard because you just don't want to play somebody for playing him and then burn a year of eligibility when they could just pocket it and then wait for the season to move on. So, but yeah, so it's going to be interesting. As far as, you know, other logistical things concerning Michigan State, I mean, it's Air Force. I mean, I don't want to overlook this game, and you can't overlook it, and you better believe that Michigan State is not going to overlook this game. But Michigan State, after beating Oregon, number 4 in the Associated Press poll, I think Michigan State, I mean, I think it's going to be a blowout this weekend. You know, let's be real here. Let's be logical here. I think Michigan State is going to certainly handle Air Force at home, and it's not going to be a close game. But, you know, something that Coach D also talked about, you know, around this time of the year is, you have to stay healthy, and that's the big worry right now for any college football team at this point in the year. You want to stay healthy week to week to week, and we know just the overall nature of college football. It's tough to do. It's tough to do because you play a physical game, but you want to stay relatively healthy, especially when it comes to those playmaking positions in what you do. Again, folks, our phone lines are open 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You know, I had the opportunity last week of attending a pretty cool event here on Michigan State's campus, and it was actually the revealing of Through the Banks of the Red Cedar. Now, they didn't show the entire documentary, of course, recounting, you know, the 1965-66 National Championship football team of Michigan State. And, of course, Clinton Jones getting inducted to the College Football Hall of Fame and in the Ring of Fame at Spartan Stadium. He was, you know, around during that era, such an influential part of that team. Gene Washington, well, of course, is a famed wide receiver who played with Clinton and Bubba Smith and all those guys during that time as well. And Maya Washington, the daughter of Gene, has put together a documentary that talks about that team. You know, Duffy Daugherty, I mean, you know, recruiting from the South, bringing African-Americans from the South to his football program here in the North and setting a trend that previously really had never been set. And it's so interesting. And I had to ask, you know, and talk to Maya and Gene, as well as Clinton, and even Lorenzo White, who benefited from that era as a football star from Michigan State and you know, who went on to the pros as well. I had to ask all of them what that team meant to the era of Michigan State football moving forward and what it means, you know, going beyond the world of football as well.
I think what I hope, especially for our generation, this is a way for us to look back at the past and see how far we've come, but also to honor the everyday people. These were guys from small towns in the South who basically had an opportunity through just sport to bring national attention not only to the game but also the possibility of seeing African Americans participating in a way that we hadn't seen before. And so I hope our generation doesn't forget the stories that come out of the civil rights movement, that we keep thinking about new angles and ways to tell these stories, because my dad's is one story, but there are numbers of stories out there that haven't been told. And I think that's probably the main thing I hope people take from that, is that we have so much of a debt to pay for those people who stepped up in big ways, whether that was protesting and sitting in and marching and really being at the forefront of the movement, as well as those who made an impact in quieter ways.
I think that the part of the education, I can't say enough about the education part. That is, you know, it was very important for me because my parents didn't have a chance to go on to school. And now I'm given that chance to go and get a degree. And so even in my pro football career, I came back here to Michigan State in the off season and I worked in the college student placement center, and I did my graduate work, and I got my master's in college student personnel administration. So I did that for four straight off seasons. And so I'm just so proud that I was able to do that, because the education part is so big. Now the other part that I'm very proud of is that the Big Ten Conference was really a leader in bringing a lot of the black players from the South, because the University of Minnesota, the University of Iowa, they were doing not as much as Michigan State, but they were a part of that early group. And all the years that I was at Michigan State and my years in pro football, everything down South was still segregated. I mean, the separate schools and all of that. And so now, as I look back, hey, integration is it's a lot better, but we still have a ways to go.
Evidently, right?
Yeah, evidently in our society, but it's much better than it used to be.
It's bigger than our imagination, because even though it's like we're in the middle of a storm, but we're so protected. We're riding that storm, you know, creating the future. It's kind of like going back to the future and fast-forwarding it again, rewinding and coming back and seeing the development of those causes from 50 years ago manifested this time in a new program in the 21st century. So think about it. We're the Spartans of the 20th century. Now we're in the 21st century, and we're still making causes that are even, you know, it's even much deeper than people really realize. You know, it's just not about sports. It's not about football. It's about the human relations. It's about the interconnectedness, the past and the present and the future. All is just simultaneous right now in this moment. So the causes that we're making right now in this moment that I'm interviewing with you are the causes for a better future.
Oh, man. I mean, like I said, I just came in when I heard that they were here. I just, you know, I mean, every time I hear about the 65 and the 66 team, I would think that everybody would need to know the situation and, you know, how it all started, you know, with them coming here, Bubba, you know, and, you know, the guys, you know, I say Bubba and the guys, but, you know, you just talk about the team. I mean, that team was like, you know, national championship, and the only reason they couldn't go to national championship because you couldn't go back to back, and you know, and just you know, just a, I would say, you know, when you think about George Webster, think about when you do think about Bubba, and you think about, they tell you about the Bear Bryant story, how they got here, you know, man, that was just unbelievable. But you know, like I said, I look up to those guys, and I'm glad to be a part of a school that had that type of tradition.
How about that? And a special thanks to Maya Washington, Gene Washington, the great Clinton Jones, and, of course, Lorenzo White for taking some time with me to talk about that incredible era in Michigan State football lore. All right, we have a call right now on line one. We've got our great dear friend of WKAR's Current Sports, Kirk from Grand Ledge. Kirk, how you doing?
Not too bad, Al. Hey, I want to ask you a quick question about Air Force and what Coach D'Antonio said about the quarterback being out and the fact that the guy who's the second stringer actually started some games in 2013. But before I do that, I need to know, is the studio a little tight in there since Isaac got some national TV airtime? You know, he was on the Weather Channel of all things, national TV, and I was like, "Holy cow!"
Did you get a chance to see him? Did you see him on national TV live?
I saw him. You know, I had the Weather Channel on, trying to get a feel for what the weather was going to be like, and I hear this voice, and I went, "I know this voice." And I go back and I look, and here he is. And he's got a sport coat on that looked kind of plaid, kind of looked like a Bobby Knight kind of thing.
Yeah. Like the 70s, right? He was rocking like the 70s, like Ron Burgundy look, right? But yeah, isn't that crazy? And he's a sophomore on national television. It is a bit tight. I mean, he should just host a show from here on out, right?
No, I shouldn't.
I'm trying to figure out how he scored that gig.
Well, I'll tell you what. Michigan State's journalism department here has done a really remarkable job over the years, Kirk. And Joanne Gerstner, who has, you know, written for publications like ESPN. She still writes for, you know, the New York Times. she just has connections everywhere. I'm not exactly sure. I guess she has a connection somewhere at the Weather Channel, and they were looking for a student. They reached out to Joanne. They were looking for a student to talk about the weather in East Lansing for the big game. And, of course, Isaac having on-air experience here at WKAR, you know, she reached out to Isaac. And, of course, Isaac's not going to turn that down. And, boom,
no.
You know. Yeah, isn't that pretty cool, though?
Yeah, that was awesome.
Very cool.
Thanks for the show, Kirk. That means a lot. I'm happy you guys see it.
Yeah, and to address your question about the presser this morning, you know, D'Antonio, I listened to it, and Coach D'Antonio, he talked about how the team has been practicing against the option no matter who's in the backfield. He talked about how it is unfortunate that they will be missing their starting quarterback, but they are prepared, and they have been practicing against that option for quite some time, even dating before the season even started. So they're ready. They're ready.
All right, thanks
so much, Kirk. Appreciate
thanks,
your call.
Kirk.
All right. Well, in just a sec, we're going to have a brief chat. We can ring them up right now. Let's hit our second break really briefly. When we come back, we will be chatting with Al Manfroni, who is the head coach of the Michigan State Club football team. You don't want to miss that chat and so much more. We'll put a bow on current sports when we get back. You are tuned in right here on AM 870. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. We want to invite right now a friend of the show who is doing some great things when it comes to the Michigan State Club football team. He is the head coach of that team. Al Manfroni joins us to put a bow on this edition of WKAR's Current Sports. Al, how you doing?
Great, Al. How are you?
I am doing fantastic, my friend. And you know what? First off, Al, you know, because we only got about 7 minutes here, I want you to briefly talk about the year so far, and I know you guys have had a scrimmage. Have you guys started the season just yet, Al?
No, actually, we've had a scrimmage. We're going to be doing a couple other things before the regular season. Our first game is against Ohio State, and that is, I believe, October the 4th.
That'll be October 4th. Okay.
So we're unfortunately our first game of the season was they had to reschedule and it didn't work out. So we ended up eliminating that game off the schedule, and so it looks like our first game is going to be against Ohio State.
Gotcha. Now, you know, Al, you and I have talked. Right on the heels of this upcoming year for you. I mean, you coming in as the new head coach of this squad. And I tell you what, it's always a challenge when coming into, you know, something new, you know, being the first at anything, you know, is it challenges for me even when I came into this job, you know, trying to do radio for the very first time. For you, Al, I mean, what hurdles have you encountered when trying to get, you know, and preparing for an upcoming season in which you are the new head coach of this squad?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, we're running a 60-man squad, which is, you know, basically the size of any college varsity program at this point. The challenge is all of the logistical issues. Equipment, you know, recruitment, you know, obviously money, coming up with a budget and that kind of thing. And then, you know, of course, the obvious things, which are finding venues, you know, making sure you have a venue with which to play your games at. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these have all been challenges. I'm glad to say that we've, you know, pretty much done very well. We've been practicing for months. Matter of fact, we'll be out there tonight practicing. You know, basically you can compare this to any, you know, Division II or Upper Division III program.
Yeah, certainly, without a doubt. And again, folks, if you're just now joining us here on the show, we are putting a bow on this edition of Current Sports by chatting with Al Manfroni, who is the head coach of the Michigan State Club football team. Now, Al, what type of squad do you have, and who are some players to look for this upcoming year for your team?
Well, we have, you know, we of course, everybody's new, so it's not as if we have, you know, anyone that has any time under their belt. We did have a scrimmage, which we won, which was we were pretty happy with, considering, you know, we had only been in pads for 2 days, you know, and so for us to be able to, you know, pull that out was pretty good. But out of that scrimmage came some very interesting prospects for us. We have two very good quarterbacks. I think that they're both going to contribute this year. They showed great poise during the scrimmage, completed a lot of passes, which was good. We run a spread offense, so basically we're passing 75% of the time. Mm-hmm. So it was good to see. We just picked up a new player. As a running back, we've seen some great things in him so far, but we'll have a chance to test him in the oncoming weeks. We have a great defensive tackle his name is Schlossberg, and he's showed some tremendous talent at the scrimmage. Mm-hmm. So we have a number of players that stepped up and kind of, you know, surprised us, really.
Okay. All right, Al. Well, again, we only got 2 minutes here, Al, but for those that want to follow your guys, follow you guys through the season, I mean, how can they do so? And I want to actually have you, Al, as the season goes on, after every single game that you guys play, to give us a brief synopsis. How does that sound?
That'd be fine. They can follow us on, Michigan State Football Club has a Facebook and Twitter page. You can follow us there at any time. We usually try to keep it updated with, you know, current information for games and times and anything like that. So it's great. We are trying to get our home games on campus. That's hopefully we can make that happen. Mm-hmm. And if not, if we can't, then it looks like we'll possibly be over at the Hope Sports Complex.
Okay. Well, let's hope that you guys are on campus. All right. And we'll keep folks abreast of that situation as well. We'll do. All right, Al.
Appreciate it.
All right. Again, head coach of the Michigan State Club football team, Al Manfroni. We'll be in touch, Al. Thanks for your time, my man.
Take care. You have a great day.
You too. You too. All right. Well, man, I tell you what, this show flies by when you're having fun, folks. I want to give a special shout out to all of you out there for tuning in to today's edition of Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Again, folks, if you happen to tune in late and you missed the show, just simply go to WKAR.org. We post each and every show that we do here throughout the week. Take care. Have one fantastic afternoon. And be easy, people.